Hello, hello, and welcome to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free movie podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and we are in the middle of season 6 of the podcast, which is looking at the best films of 2020. Over the last several episodes, we've hit a variety of different movie genres. We've looked at documentaries, prestige dramas, and some smaller indie movies, but what we haven't discussed yet is an animated film. That changes today as we look at the award-winning animated feature, Wolfwalkers. Wolfwalkers is a remarkable movie for a number of reasons. It's from an Irish animation studio called Cartoon Saloon. You may be aware of their other work. Their previous films are The Secret of Kells, Song of the Sea, and The Breadwinner, all of which have received praise from critics and audiences for their assured storytelling and their beautiful animation. Wolfwalkers is getting similar praise, and for good reason. It's a very memorable film and an absolute feast visually. It's streaming on Apple TV Plus now, and it's absolutely worth watching. My guest today is filmmaker Eric White. Eric has worked on a number of films, and if you're keyed into the Arkansas film scene at all, you've likely seen something he's worked on. I saw his animated horror short called Little Brother at the Made in Arkansas Film Festival, and it really made an impression. That was a few years ago. I've seen a few of his short films since then, The Unbeatable Bixby, and another called Sunhood, all of which I've really enjoyed. He works for Arkansas's local PBS station, AETN, and they have been able to produce an exciting kids show during the pandemic called Blueberry's Clubhouse. We talked briefly about all of those projects during our conversation, but all you need to know for now is that Eric White is really good at what he does. He's a super nice guy. He's incredibly knowledgeable about cinema and animated films in particular, and he has some great thoughts on today's film. So let's say hello. Welcome to the podcast, Eric White. How are you today?
Doing good. Thank you for having me on, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about Wolfwalkers. It's a movie that I've really, really enjoyed, and so there's a lot to discuss with it. But yeah, I'm excited. So before we get going into that, I thought we'd talk a little bit about you and who you are. I was telling you this, but I wanted to talk about this movie on the podcast, and I reached out to Johnny Brennan, who listeners may recognize that name. He helps run Made in Arkansas, and he's been on this podcast a couple times, and just knows a lot of people in the area. I said, I want to talk about an animated film, and he said, you gotta get Eric White. And I recognized the name because I had seen something of yours at Made in Arkansas, and it was It was a horror short, Little Brother. Oh. Is that what it was called? Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yes, and that was a very memorable animated short. And then when I looked at your credits, I was like, oh, I've also seen Unbeatable Bixby, and I've seen Sunhood, a handful of other things that you've had a hand in. So, you're a presence here in the Arkansas film community, so I'm glad to connect with you on the podcast. But, tell us about yourself and your work, and you have worked in animation before.
I've been dabbling in animation for a while now. I'm not classically trained in any sort of sense. Sure. It's gotten so much easier within just even the past like 5 to 6 years. Little Brother came about, it was all like charcoal on paper, and like stacks of papers that all had to be like scanned in individually and then gone in and removed like the backgrounds for like foreground, because you know the root animation is like done on cells and they overlay those and take a film image. But I didn't have that money to buy a bunch of cells, so I just did it on white paper and went in and cut it out through Photoshop. And so that took like 4 years to do, like off and on, just kind of working here and there. But now, like, you could do something that length, like it was only like a 5-minute short. You could do something that length in an afternoon if you really put your mind to it.
Wow.
Because everything, you can do everything digitally now. And so, it's just, I love doing animation. I love watching animation. I love all the new stuff, the old stuff, the kid stuff, and stuff like Wolfwalkers, where it's somewhere in between. Not really like a movie. It's a movie that's kind of for everybody, I think.
Yeah, it was one I was comfortable watching with my kids. The second time I watched it, I was with them, and they liked it pretty well. Like, they're pretty young, and so it's like a little heavy for them maybe. But before we get into that, I want to say too about little brother, I saw it on the big screen actually, and then, so with that movie too, the sound design is really incredible. So I want to talk to you about like sound design with animation as we get going. But your current thing that you're working on is, and you have a day job and employed in animation, which is really cool. And you're working on a show called Blueberry's Clubhouse. Tell us about that and kind of what your role is with it.
Oh, for sure. So Blueberry's Clubhouse is a it's a puppet show that we kind of only got made because of the pandemic, of like all the terrible things that's happened this past year. It was just fortuitous. It was just the stars aligned and we were able to make something sort of like out of because the schools were closed. It's a long story. So schools got closed down. So Arkansas PBS started doing on-air education stuff for students that they could watch at home and learn along with teachers and everything. And then along that way, we partnered with the Arkansas Art Center. Now they're called the Arkansas Museum of Fine Arts.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And because they were looking for an avenue to get some of their teaching out, and you know, we're always looking for great partners out in the community, it seemed like a good fit. So we did a little short that was like a puppet they made like on the fly, and they were going to, it was like Blueberry's Engineering Clubhouse, and they were going to build like little shadow puppets and everything. And it became like a little 7-minute short. And then from there, like everyone loved it. So we were just like, what if we just did like a real show?
Yeah.
So we pulled as much money we could together, and, we got a great team of people over at Arkansas PBS, Levi Agee, Tara Case, who I work with a lot, CJ Burks, Corey Womack, and so many other people I can't even name. And then all the wonderful people with the Art Center, the AMFA, I'll call them AM. There's the AMFA, so many great people over there. Just really, really was all just like the mentality of like wanting to put on a show, and like, everyone donating so much time and energy and effort to it. The turnaround was tight. Like we would film, we started filming mid-July, and we would film an episode, and then 2 weeks later it would be on air. So we'd film an episode and then have to cut it, do sound, animation, everything, and then put it right back out. Which is something I've never had to do and hoped never have to do again.
That quickly, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely challenging, but super rewarding in a lot of ways. And right now we're working on a season 2.
Great.
Yeah, and so we've got a little more money, we got a little more time now, so we don't have to kill ourselves. But we're trying to get all that together, and we're just in pre-production right now, so we haven't written any scripts yet, but you should look for it sometime mid-July, right before school starts back on Arkansas PBS and all of our social media sites.
That is so cool. Yeah, it's so interesting how like the pandemic has obviously been so hard in so many ways, but there's like creative constraints can sometimes lead to really cool things. And I think that's this is a cool example of that. You know, I have young kids. I have a 5- and a 6-year-old. So we are definitely going to check this out. And so I looked at it a little bit online. So it's puppets, but there also is like an animated portion to each episode.
Yes. So a lot of the, we could only afford to build really one puppet, which Aaron Larkin with the AMFA built for us like on the fly, like built it within like 2 weeks or something like that, like in like an insane amount of time to build a puppet. But we obviously couldn't build more than that, so we had to figure out a way to maybe bring in some of Blueberry's family or like other puppets and stuff like that. So we ended up building a lot of like digital puppets. So, and most of those kind of fell on me because we didn't have a lot of we didn't have like a graphics person at the time. But we wanted to do these sort of like these jokes, because the show can get a little heavy at times with a lot of emotion, because a lot of it was dealing with being locked inside and so like a metaphor for the pandemic as a whole that, you know, hopefully kids could watch and relate to. But we wanted to like break it up and throw in some fun. They're really like dad jokes, but but these sort of like creatures that live in the clubhouse tree. And so we got to design these, like there's like a little bird who's his name was Robin Repartee, and a squirrel and a couple other things. And then Blueberry's family too. Like there's a muscadine character and an elderberry character.
Nice.
Yeah, they were all like drawn digitally and then animated in Adobe's character animator, which is like so fast and easy to do now. Like you can make something like literally in an afternoon. Most of these were done within like a day because we didn't have time to spend much more time on them.
Well, I cannot wait to check that out and for season two as well coming up. And yeah, that's, you know, we're actually homeschooling now in my house. Okay. So it's that's got its own challenges. But yeah. Stuff like this, you know, some educational screen time is really a welcome thing because, you know, we don't want to turn the screens on all day. But sometimes we need daddy needs a little break.
And all the old episodes are on YouTube right now. You can turn it on and you'll have 2 hours to yourself where they can watch all four.
So there we go. That's great. Well, yeah, I will link to all that stuff in the show notes, as well as the Fine Arts Center and kind of all the things you're mentioning there. So listeners, you can find all of that and yeah, support local and, you know, I always love most anything on PBS. So I think it's great. All right. Without further ado, let's talk about Wolfwalkers.
Wolf, wolf, hunt them far and yonder.
The forest is brimming with wolves. It's my job to hunt them down, not yours.
But we can hunt them together. Wolves, bears, dragons even.
She's one of them wolf walkers.
Wolf walkers?
Wait!
The ones that can talk to wolves with some wild magic.
You can come out now.
We can smell ya. You stink.
You're a wolf walker.
You're a wolf when you sleep.
What?
A girl when you're awake.
Robin, something's happened to me.
Yeah, I can see that. Flipping great. You're a wolf now. Be a wolf.
Are getting smaller every day.
These wolves, they're just beasts.
Tonight, we put an end to this.
I promise your mother I'd keep you safe.
I have to help her.
All right, let's talk about Wolfwalkers. So this is an animated film, as we've discussed already, and it is the animation style is really incredible. But basically, it tells the story of it's a coming-of-age story of a young girl named Robin, and she's sort of displaced from her home that she's used to. She's new in this in this Irish town that she and her father are living in. Her mother's not there. We don't know exactly why at first, and we kind of piece that together as we go. But the town is near a large forest that has a lot of wolves. And so there's basically this kind of conflict between the townsfolk and the wolves. And then that's all complicated by the presence of some magical beings called Wolfwalkers, where it's where we get the title. And it's, you know, it's a little bit like the myth of the werewolf, but it's very different as well. It doesn't have those kind of horror connotations, but basically it's a people that can transform into wolves. And so that's kind of the basic setup, and it goes in a lot of different places with that. This is from a production studio called Cartoon Saloon, which this is their fourth feature, and I've seen one other, but I've heard incredible praise for all of the other films they've made. That's The Secret of Kells, as well as Song of the Sea and The Breadwinner, their other films. The Breadwinner I watched a few years back, and it is really incredible. Similar in style. I'd say this one is a little bit more ambitious stylistically, but The Breadwinner tells the story of a Muslim family, and the daughter has to provide for the family, and it's very emotionally, it's a little, maybe a little less kid friendly than this one, but a very, very good. But anyway, that's kind of a little bit of context there. But so I wanted to ask you, Eric, as a filmmaker and an animator, what was your impression of kind of the visual style of Wolfwalkers?
Beautiful. Like all of it looks amazing. And I would say alone, if you don't want to see it for any other reason, like you're like, ah, the story doesn't interest me, or the characters, I don't see myself in them or anything like that. Just watch it alone for just how it looks. It is so amazingly, like it feels like you're walking into like a watercolor painting at times.
Yeah.
And the way they like change that up as the story progresses and it gets more complicated and it's amazing. It's a visual feast from start to finish.
It really is. And I think like I had heard that before I even saw the trailer, and the trailer gave me a sense of that. And I was like, wow, this looks really great. But then when you're actually watching it, it's like so immersive, kind of being in this world that, yeah, it's really one of the most beautiful visually animated things that I've seen in a long time. I think there's several moments where almost a graphic novel-esque, it goes into like multi panels, like it'll split the screen into three parts, showing different characters' reactions to something, or there's a few moments where it's like zoomed in. It's like a zoomed out shot and then a zoomed in shot of the same exact thing. So we see like one person in the crowd, just really inventive in that way. There's a lot of wolves in the film, right. And the way they're animated is really incredible. They move in this kind of very fluid way, just really beautiful to watch. And then also we have characters that are transforming into wolves and back to humans. And there's like a lot of great first person, like wolf vision shots, and the way the visual, it's kind of has its own motif, I guess, when we're in that, and it looks wholly different, but, so, so beautiful. And yeah, again, it just really immerses you, in this world. So yeah, I think the visuals are really incredible in this movie.
So good. I was reading about it after I watched it, because I watched it. And I was like, oh, how did they do any of this stuff?
Yeah.
And apparently, like the wolf vision, I was reading, but I think it was one of the directors was talking about it. It apparently took the entirety of their production time. So like while other people were working on other scenes, like someone was working on that like 3.5 minute section was just the vision portion of it.
Yeah.
And it's something to. Man, it's good. Yeah. It's so good. I don't know what else to say. Like, it's great. You should watch it.
Completely agree. Yeah. So I think you're referencing there's like a musical sequence, almost not musical in that people are singing, but it's basically when a character is kind of learning what it's like to be a wolf, and there's like a song playing. It's Running with the Wolves, and that sequence is so incredible. I've gone back and watched just that scene a few times, because it almost is like a music video esque the way the music and the actions on the screen are kind of synced up together, and it just builds and crescendos, and it's just really like when it even just started the first time, I started getting goosebumps, and I was like, this is incredible. So yeah, that's a great scene. That's fascinating to know that it took so much time. It's almost like a color swap. Like it's mostly like night, and you have these bright kind of trails. It shows how characters can smell as a wolf, like they see with their, you know, sense of smell a little bit. So there's like all these kind of trails of like smoke looking things happening, which also it kind of, there's several things like that where actually the one that I noticed the most, there's a waterfall at one point, and as the water's crashing into at the bottom, there's like this mist just kind of floating around. It just looks incredible. So anyway, yes, visually really, really top notch. Yeah, that's absolutely a reason to watch this. What about on as far as the plot goes, what did you think of the storytelling and how this story was told?
And this going back to what you kind of touched on a little bit with like how it's told visually and thematic. I mean, so on one level, it's a pretty straightforward story. Mm-hmm. Like girl wants adventure, which another thing is that usually this type of character in animated shows in general, movies, is a male character, and that we are given like a female protagonist that we're following through is, I think, an interesting and amazing choice, which I think this Studio Saloon has done a lot of this in the past. Secret of Kells is another one that's in their sort of like Celtic trilogy, which is amazing as well. I haven't seen The Breadwinner, which I need to watch it. I meant to watch it before we did this podcast.
No, like, it sounds like we've seen like the opposite of their films besides this one. Yeah, but Breadwinner's great, and I've really been wanting to watch the other two. But yeah, go ahead.
Right. So the story itself is straight down the middle. Like it's a lot of it is some of it's a little phoned in the sense that you can kind of tell maybe where some of the twists are going and mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. But that is just like window dressing in a sense. Like,
yeah.
This is what's going to get us through to the end. This is what's going to pull your tension along. And then like it's emotional beats and it's thematic beats is really what's like underneath the surface. So like, what you were talking about with like the three panel thing, I think mm-hmm. that serves a thematic and a visual representation of it. It's like how these characters, it's not just like a cool shot that they were like, let's just do three panels here. It's like these are how these people are interpreting the scene that's happening before their eyes mm-hmm. and how that impacts them. And then how that impacts how they react to each other within the story itself too.
Yeah.
So many like just, touching on themes of from the start of like environmentalism, which is not really like super blatant throughout. Like no one says like, oh, we got to protect the woods.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, like the world's going to die if we don't do it. Like, but it's always there. So then this is striking on like a second watch. The opening, it opens on these very beautiful vistas of sort of creatures in their own environments, just enjoying nature. And then comes this encroachment of humankind into it. They're cutting down trees to build things and all that sort of stuff. They're scared away by the wolves, and then we go back to those exact same shots from right before then, where the trees are all decimated and like these creatures are coming back out into it. And so there's all these like visual cues of like environmentalism and preserving like nature that don't really get like blatantly said throughout the movie. Another one is the tree that they constantly go to sit on and talk, as it slowly becomes torn down throughout the movie, which is a symbol for growing up and breaking, you know, childish things, I guess. But at the same time, it's just reinforcing that, like, the way humans have shaped that part of the world. And it's weird too. I read a lot about this while I was preparing for this podcast, and that wolves are completely wiped out in Ireland because of this time period. And so I think I read an interview with one of the writers, I think it was the director, who talked a lot about like folklore and how they kind of lost a lot of that because of how the world had changed in that time period where wolves were basically hunted and got rid of. And so it's sort of like losing parts of their history in a way, because it's gone. You can't ever get it back.
That's really interesting. I didn't know all of that about wolves actually being gone. There's a almost like a throwaway line in that Maeve says. So we have Robin is the main character, and her father is a big character as well. And then Maeve is the Wolfwalker girl with this like big red hair. Such an interesting character design too.
Right.
But then she has this line at one point about St. Patrick. I don't know what, maybe it's one of the townspeople who says this, like when they're kind of, they're very afraid. There's kind of like a lot of folk tales about what's going on in the woods, but one of them says something about St. Patrick, you know, made a deal with the pagan gods or something back in the day, like a long time ago. And we're by chopping down the trees, we're breaking that commitment.
Yeah.
And like, that's why we're in danger. So I thought it was interesting. And then I was just looking around on Amazon. There's like a few different, there's like a graphic novel that they've made since the movie came out, and,
oh, cool.
and like a book about the artwork. But I just clicked on the graphic novel and just like clicked on the little preview thing, thinking it's just going to be the story of the movie. But it opens with St. Patrick and he's doing some stuff. So I guess there's like some interesting backstory there. So I'm curious to check that out. I like this movie enough that I might like buy that and have a look at it. But that was an interesting point of it too. But yeah, I like what you're saying about some of these things, it's made clear, but it's not overdone the way like the environmentalism is there. I think too, it's kind of an interesting religious theme throughout this. So there's, and then just the political, it all kind of ties together really nicely, I think. So there's like a political situation that I don't completely understand, but basically England is the colonizer. They're kind of taking power. And, so there's this Lord Protector and then Robin, her father, and Lord Protector is the villain here. And he, you know, he hates the wolves. He wants to tame them. He wants to, you know, have power over nature. And, and he again, it's not overdone, but he talks about how, you know, this is God's will for us, that the land would submit to us. And he at one point he actually like he's praying and asking God, what do we do? And then he like answers the prayer himself. He's like, here's what we're going to do. This is what you want me to do. So it's just like this whole idea of speaking for God and knowing what he wants and how dangerous that can be. But yeah, I think he's a good villain in that sense. Yeah.
No, for sure. And I think to what you're saying about authoritarianism and this sort of which is heady stuff for like just a regular movie.
Yeah.
But much less a movie that's designed around the whole family can watch and everything. Yeah. Uh-huh. But this sort of idea of like questioning authority, and like Cromwell, the Lord Overseer, is like a perfect example of someone who is sort of like indoctrinated into it and believes it even if he doesn't believe it. Like, he is asking for it, but he knows what the answer is going to be because he dictates that. He is his will is law. But by inverse of that is there's a scene with the dad and Robin, and she asked him like, why are you doing this? And he just says, because I'm afraid. And the idea of doing stuff, not questioning authority, but just doing stuff because you don't know any better and you're afraid of what consequences come from it, is like, whoa.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And it really shows well, like, so there's this power dynamic coming from the Lord Protector to her father directly, and then what her father does out of fear, like, and his actions are all completely like totally believable if that's what he would do, but you see the way it really negatively affects his family and their whole lives and his job and all of that. Yeah, I think it does that well. There's almost a visual motif there too, like he always has fire, the villain. Does it, he has like a torch, and then there's a few moments where when Robin's father is getting really angry at her and kind of yelling like, you can't go back out into the woods, like the background around him kind of goes red and gets this like shadowy, it feels very much the same. It's like this power and fear dynamic kind of coming back in subtly. I thought that was a really nice touch too.
Oh yeah, all that. And this goes back to sort of like visual motifs and just visual style too, but whenever characters get angry, there is this like encroachment of darkness that comes spilling in on the sides of the screen. So it'll go from like a 16:9 image to this like 4:3 image. And I didn't notice the first time either. I guess I was just too involved in the story the first time through. But, like, rewatching, I was like, oh wow, like, completely blew me away first that I didn't notice it the first time, and then that is such like a strong, interesting choice to convey like emotion through these like animated characters, because sometimes that is like hard to get an emotional response out of something that is completely drawn, and that it's, you're sort of like riding in that uncanny valley of like where it's just human enough to like believe in, but never gonna look photorealistic, which I think this is something that this movie does really well, is take these little stylistic flourishes and ground them in this human drama.
Yeah, and that's a great transition too to talking about the performances, because I think the voice performances are a big part of that too. So what did you think about the voice performance? We have Sean Bean as the father, and then two young actors I didn't know before this as Robin and Maeve. Their names are Honor Neefsi and Eva Whitaker,
playing the two leads. I'm glad you said their names, because I would have butchered them.
I may have butchered them. Sorry if I did. But what do you think of their voice performances?
Oh, no, they from the start, like there's a lot of like, I keep saying children's entertainment, but there's a lot of like animated movies and stories and stuff where either the kids are voiced by adults. I mean, Bobby Hill is like a good example of that, or like The Simpsons, where they're voiced by adults and trying to be kids. But these are like from the get go. I wrote it down like as soon as I heard it. I was like, these are kids voicing kids, and they are so good, so good, like. I had never heard of either one of the actresses before this, and Maeve, I believe, or Eva is a virtual, like, unknown, hasn't really done much outside of this.
Else on her IMDb, yeah.
Amazing, because there are so many people who can perform physically in the sense that they are there on a stage or in a movie, and like they can read body language and stuff like that, but to be able to convey like subtlety in facial expressions and to have that be translated into animation is spectacular.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You know, a few kind of like touchstones for this that I kept thinking of, one was Game of Thrones, just because Sean Bean's there, and also I think that scene, there's a great scene, like a sort of an epic scene sort of in the middle when the Lord Protector is trying to show the wolf on stage, and it really reminded me of a scene in Game of Thrones, just because the crowd is there watching and there's a lot of drama happening on the stage. So there's that. But then I played the Zelda video games a lot growing up, and I always think of that when anything remotely like Celtic. But mm-hmm. I think in the world building way, this is like it reminded me of that. But then also Princess Mononoke, the Studio Ghibli film, mm-hmm. Just because a lot of the environmental stuff is there, and sort of the in this movie, townie versus forest dweller. She always calls Robin a townie, and that kind of gets back to their performances too, because Robin as our lead is so her voice performance is really kind of like pretty put together and mm-hmm. But curious and innocent. But then Maeve is so incredible because her character is this, you know, wild a wild animal basically, and that so much comes through in her voice performance too. It's really amazing, and she talks like a child, like she calls her mummy, she's always talking about and that kind of thing, right. but there's this wild kind of graveliness to her voice, and also so very Irish sounding. It's a perfect performance, I think.
Right. Now, all of it feels very coming from those from our two leads. All of it feels very genuine. Like kids would say these things. Like none of it feels like an adult's interpretation of what a kid would say.
Yeah.
A lot of it rings very true to that sort of just like how kids speak.
Yeah.
And especially in a situation like this where they don't really understand things, but they're willing to go along with them because it's, you know, it's magic and you become a wolf at night.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So kind of along the lines of the performances, I think just the sound design in general is really good. Like there's a lot of there's like when they're in the crowd, you hear the crowd. The first time I watched this, I had wireless headphones in, so I was watching it and I was just kind of in it, and that was a good way to experience this. But then the music too, I think, is really amazing. That just the score throughout, but then there's a couple songs. I think there's the one in the Running with the Wolves sequence, and then there's one in the credits. Which the singer, I looked up the singer, her name is Aurora, and I think she's from roughly from that part of the world. The only other thing I knew from speaking of animated movies, Frozen 2, she is on the Into the Unknown song. She's like the voice from the wilderness that's in the movie. But yeah, so that they paid a lot of money to have a name to do that little voice, which is funny. But yeah, same person. So yeah,
Along the same lines. Right, but along those same lines too, like a different studio would have had like a pop song there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if this was like a mainstream like movie for general audience, like Rihanna would have came in there and had a song about it. But I love that it doesn't really feel out of place. Like it seems like a continuation of what you were talking about with the music going forward to that point. And then just like the sound design in general too is spectacular. Like all the crowd stuff and like all the things near the end where they're in the waterfall and the fire and like all of the men are hunting in the woods are just so crisp and clean and frightening, like very frightening for a movie like this. I watched it and then I watched it again. And then I immediately was like, I really wish this would have been released in theaters. I would have loved to have seen it like on a big screen with like real nice sound. But maybe someday, maybe
we'll get if this ever replays in the theater, I'm going, I'm taking my kids with me. Yeah, absolutely.
There was one last thing I'd like to talk about though. Yeah. And this kind of goes back to the like animation style, and that everything feels like it was all drawn at the same time, which a lot of like animated films, particularly like older animated films, just because of how the process worked, you had some guy drawing foreground characters and someone else was drawing background characters, and there's a clear like separation there where you could see like this person's foreground, this person's background. If they go to pick up something like a cup, that cup's going to look a little different, a little weird at first.
Interesting.
And this, everything just like blended together so seamlessly with like, and I don't know if they did like lighting and post, if they went in like digitally, like altered some of the stuff, but everything just like looked seamless, which is hard and amazing. Like, I don't understand how they do it. And I'm super jealous of them, but so good visually.
Yes, absolutely. This is one that really has stuck with me. I didn't see it till after the end of the year. It was 2021 by the time I watched it, or this probably would have been in my top 10 of last year. Really, really highly recommend it. It sounds like you do as well.
Yeah.
That is Wolf Walkers. You can watch it on Apple TV Plus. It's worth doing like a free week or whatever trial just to watch this if you can, I think, because it's definitely worth seeing. And I hope it gets that big screen release one day. That would be amazing. Yeah. Fingers crossed on that. Well, thank you, Eric, so much for joining me today. I think it's been a great conversation, and I can't wait to get this one out there, and hope to have you back sometime soon too.
For sure. Anytime. You want me to come back anytime, I will come back and talk with you about anything you want to talk about. This is my first podcast, so you ushered me into it, and I'm happy to return anytime.
That's great, because there always are like animated things. I mean, I watch a lot of animated stuff because I have kids, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I wish I could talk about this one on the podcast. So now I've got a go-to person. Perfect.
Yeah.
Big, big thanks to Eric White again for being here today. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope to have him back again very soon. We've got some exciting episodes coming up. Up next is going to be Boy State. That's a documentary about hundreds of 17-year-old boys putting on democracy, basically, at a camp. This is interesting because I actually attended Arkansas Boy State. The film is about Texas Boy State. And then I also have someone on the podcast discussing that who was not raised in the United States. So I think we have an interesting conversation. Can't wait for you guys to hear that one. After that, we've got some other plans in development. Nothing concrete just yet, but we hope to talk about the movie Minari, the new A24 film about an immigrant family in Arkansas. And then I'm probably also going to discuss the film Martin Eden, which is an Italian film that is streaming now on Mubi and is making a lot of waves. Thank you so much for listening to Art House Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at www.appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Art House Garage, you can leave a rating or review in your podcast app, or you can buy an Art House Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. Stay in the loop about Art House Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter by going to arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Art House Garage in all those places, or you find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob-free.